nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm Kelly. Michael Rubin will be in just a few moments from time, but I'm going to play you a little bit of Ricky Shetty, who does an interview with the CEO of the Pacific National Exhibition. So it's about a minute and 23 seconds. So hopefully Michael will come in and prepare for our this week's show. So here we go.
Welcome to Daddy Blogger TV. I'm here live at the PNE on the media preview of The Beast. I'm here with the CEO of the PNE, Mike. Mike's a dad of two kids, so first of all, I want to know, what's the latest with your two kids?
Doing really well. They're not going to be on this ride, of course. They're too young for that, but really good. They're looking forward to Playland opening on Saturday. They'll be here with me then.
Cool. So what are the latest things for the PNE and the Playland this year, just generally, for families?
Yeah, so obviously this is our big launch, The Beast. This is more of an extreme ride, and most of our Playland goers will absolutely love this.
Right.
But of course, we have many things for families, people of all ages, really. So lots of different things to do through the season, and then of course, for the fair, things expand for the families and kids, and we'll be announcing actually all of the fair stuff a week from today.
Awesome. Can you give us a sneak preview of anything?
I cannot.
Okay.
No.
It lifts the seal.
Yeah. All right. Until Wednesday.
Okay. Stay tuned. 1 week from today.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about The Beast itself, a little bit about the origin and why you brought it here to the PNE.
Yeah. So first time in North America, this type of a ride. It's out of the Netherlands and started this process about 2 years ago. And we're finally here. It's ready to go for Saturday, but as you can see behind me here, it goes pretty fast, 90 kilometers an hour.
Crazy, wow.
Rotates 360 degrees.
And so there you go. There's not much. So there you go. Ricky Shetty talking about the interview with the CEO and talking about The Beast. Can't get all of the clips of it, but you get most of it anyways. We got another clip here called The Minkoff Law is part of the Business Expert Show. Of course, Michael Rubin does a lot of business expert show stuff. So Michael Rubin's talking about Andrei Mikhov is the premier trademark lawyer in Vancouver. He has created a trademark factory from scratch after realizing the need of straightforward since the help of business owners protect their intellectual property. So this is on YouTube. You can check out youtube.com and search word Business Expert Show. So this is what Michael has to say. And a little intro there, hopefully. Today's guest, Andrei Mikhov. Here we go.
Sponsored by Jiffy Apps.
Oh, all the sponsors, of course.
Welcome again to the Business Expert Show, and we're here today with Andrei Mikhov of Mikhov Law.
That's what it is, yes.
And, well, I guess the really big question, what made you and how did you become an intellectual property lawyer?
Well, actually, it happened to me twice. The first time was when I just joined the Russian law school, and the reason I joined Russian law school was, in Russia, if you don't join a university, you have to join the army. and I didn't want to join the Army, but I had no idea I wanted to be a lawyer. But the closest I got to knowing that I wanted to do law was when I remembered that when I was a kid, I was always arguing with my parents, always coming up with some smart-ass arguments why things had to be done my way. And everybody told me, you gotta be a lawyer. So really, that was the extent of my knowledge about the legal profession. So I joined the law school. I didn't really like it all that much until one day my father, who was a famous Russian composer, heard his music on the radio advertising Samsung, and they didn't ask permission. So he called the radio station and told him, you can't just take my music and use it as you want.
Yeah.
And they told him to sit down, shut up, and be happy that they're making him even more famous. He didn't like that very much. So he slams down, says, I'll see you in court. He slams down the phone, and then he thinks, so who's going to take this to court? Because it was 1995, I think. And really, Russia didn't have all that many copyright lawyers. Because Russia just had its new copyright, the first post-Soviet Copyright Act.
Right.
So he told me, he asked me, do you want to do this? And I had really no idea about copyright, no idea about what you do in the courtroom, no idea about anything. All I was learning was just some theoretical stuff, none of which I've used ever since. But I said, sure, let's do it. And I was, you know, building the plane as I was flying it. I learned on the go, and we took them to court. I ripped them apart, and then they bumped the judge, and then we lost. And I remember this as it was this yesterday. I was sitting in my room, like, all messed up. My dad comes in my room and says, so what are you going to do now? And I go, I don't know. I think I've done everything that I should have done. I have no idea how I could have done it any better. We got everything laid down properly, and we had this crazy decision that makes no sense. And he says, if you're not going to appeal this, you should quit your law school and find yourself another profession. And I will always be grateful for those words, because it really put things into perspective.
So how did the appeal go?
We lost the appeal. We appealed it even higher to one instance of Supreme Court of Russia. And mind you, that was my very first case, and I'm on my own fighting, you know, 3, 4, 5 lawyers on the other side. So we finally won on that new appeal, and so the whole thing went back, we won again, and so probably the whole thing took me about 2.5 years to go through. We won, and in the process, not only did I become really knowledgeable about the tiny little things that always go with copyright and intellectual property, I also got very passionate about protecting ideas and, you know, as the way I put it now, protecting ideas and covering assets.
Right.
So that was the first time I became an intellectual property lawyer. In 2007, me and my family, we decided to move to Canada from Russia after I've been a lawyer there for 13 years. So after 13 years of practice and my PhD in law in Russia, I had to go back to law school again for the full 3 years. They gave me no credits, nothing. And I said to myself, you want to be really open-minded to everything else, because you don't know if you love IP simply because it just happened that way or because there's something else. So I was honestly and genuinely open-minded to pretty much every other area of law, and I hated it. I hated it. You know, genuinely and honestly, I hated most of them. Every single time the issue had something to do with intellectual property, my eyes lit up. And I feel blessed that I was able to go through the whole thing, you know, become a lawyer in Canada and go back to doing what I love doing best and what I do best.
It's quite the story.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm gonna say I've known you for a number of years, and I think I even introduced you now to other people as the best pirate hunter in Canada, because I don't know of anybody better to stick after an intellectual property.
Thank you. You're doing the right thing.
tell us about the your project, the Trademark Factory.
Trademark Factory is something I came up with just over a year ago. As a new lawyer in Canada, as a new immigrant to Canada, I obviously had to think really hard, how can I position myself so that I don't starve looking for clients? And a lot of that was about finding the right offer, the right marketing approach. Because pretty much every lawyer who understands trademarks can't file trademarks.
Right.
We all use the same checklist, we all go through the same procedures, we all read the same books, we all read the same cases. And trademarks are binary. You either get one or you don't. So it's very difficult to be the best lawyer or the bad lawyer, because really nobody can assess whether you're better or not. So what I was trying to do is simplify the trademark process for business owners. Because looking at what the competition has to offer, it's beyond me how those firms actually get clients. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but business owners don't understand how the trademarking process works. So when they receive a 3-page schedule of fees listing what they're going to pay when something happens, this happens, we pay that, this happens, we pay this. I don't understand how you can actually make a business decision, let alone a meaningful business decision. And what I wanted to do is to come up with something that's going to make it very simple for them, A, to make a decision, yes, I want the trademark done, and B, have a budget for it. So I was simplifying it and simplifying it and simplifying it until one day I went to one of those workshops that we all love going to so much.
Well, you can always check it out on the Business Expert Show, where it's on YouTube. And do the search word, of course, search word Business Expert Show, which, of course, Michael here is talking about Andrei Minkoff.
He's one hell of a guy, and definitely a lawyer that you can trust. So.
And maybe we should switch microphones, because I'm hearing some sort of a humming sound.
Let's not get that one out the way.
There we go.
All right. Ooh.
Okay, so we're all set. And
is that better?
It's a little bit better. And joining us on the line is...
Carl Meadows, and he is a member of the Foundation of Hope, and... They next month we're going to be doing a walk in stiletto heels to promote awareness and equality for gay and lesbian people around the world.
Mm. Are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
All right.
Did I get that right, Carl?
Pardon me?
Did I get all that right?
Yeah, it's actually for LGBT people all around the world, and I'll actually have an opportunity to just explain the whole context and background behind it.
Okay.
So, do you want me to just start out? I've actually never been on the radio before. So
no, just go ahead and
walk me through what I'm supposed to do, and I'll try to do my best.
Go ahead and explain everything.
Okay, so my name's Carl Meadows. I'm just going to put a disclaimer. I am the chairman of the Foundation of Hope. I am a white privileged male, and I absolutely am not speaking on behalf of the lives or experiences of refugees in this. And the third thing is I will make mistakes and use probably wrong terminology, so just start with a bit of forgiveness and compassion on that level.
Okay.
So I'll just set the stage for actually the Foundation of Hope, and then I can talk a little bit about Strut. So the Foundation of Hope started in actually through conversations and friendships going back to 2012, where one of my very close friends, Giuseppe, as a Syrian, was having conversations with other gay Syrians through a Facebook page, and had met a fella named Danny Ramadan. And so in that, Danny and Giuseppe became friends. And in that friendship, it became evident that there was some, you know, elements of danger. Danny was a very outspoken activist in Syria and gay. And so Giuseppe asked me how we could help him if there was any possibility of coming to Canada. So that's where the story actually started. We brought a group together on June 12th of 2013, and we created what we called the Danny and Amir Foundation of Hope. So that was the origins of the actual foundation. We rallied the troops. We had a fundraising group, a settlement group, and a documentation group. We executed a very strict and very strong plan to get them here, and they arrived in September of 2014. So it's a really awesome, great story. So when we actually started the foundation, it was always our dream. And when I say our, there were nine men or nine people part of our original group, I believe. And our vision was always to create a legacy, that this just wasn't a one-off. A lot of the stories that inspired us were around some horrific stories happening around the globe of LGBT refugees. For me, I think the flashpoint was those two young Iranian boys quite a few years ago being hung in a town square. And I thought, oh, wow, I actually can't stand this anymore, and I need to do something. So that's a lot of our inspiration, and not all of us on the board are Canadian. So some are in the process of getting their permanent residency. Some have gone through their journey. So that was the actual beginnings of the foundation. So in August of 2014, we actually created the Permanent Foundation of Hope, incorporated in the province of BC, and so that was the beginning of the foundation. So it's been just such an incredible, wild, and wonderful ride. We've really been working over the last 6 months with our community groups. We had a community consultation on the 11th of February, really to get understanding what were the needs of the community around a permanent foundation. And so we've really learned a lot. One of the things that we, our first sets of grants were put out to the public on our website on April 6th. And the three areas of our grants that we're focusing on are community services, rescue and sponsorship, and community development, which will come out in the fall. And it's just been so exciting. So Strut is actually our first public fundraiser. And I'm very excited to say that to date, we've just raised just over $12,000. Our goal is $30,000. And the whole background with Strut and the shoe. And just, Michael, the only correction is nobody has to wear stilettos. We're kind of using the term heels loosely to make sure that we've got full community participation. The background with Strut is really around the fact that whether there's a lot of debate about the stiletto and the use of it as a metaphor, but really it's around women in many of these countries where LGBT people are persecuted. Women cannot use any feminine identity, anything like a high heel shoe or lipstick or anything. So
right.
They are fairly marginalized. At the same time, non-gender conforming males wearing a stiletto would absolutely be persecuted. So we thought that the shoe or the heel was a perfect metaphor for Strut. So the event is actually to raise awareness around LGBT refugees and their issues, and using the metaphor of the heel as one where we will walk in solidarity for all of our brothers and sisters and those in between across the world that could never actually wear them.
Okay,
so that's
we're gonna,
the underlying purpose of Strut.
Yeah, we're going to cut to a break, and then we'll get right back with the rest of your explanation.
We're going to put you on hold for a moment while we have our break. All right?
Excellent.
All right. So this has been the Community Living Show. We're going to talk about some more of that stuff in a moment, but we're going to take a break. We'll be back.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag, all types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
And welcome back to the Community Living Show here on our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM, and our throughout the hour on our, well, we're on National Community Radio Association as well, so.
Yes.
We're also on that. So back to you, Michael.
And we're with Carl Meadows, and he was explaining a really great metaphor about the high heel shoe and what it actually the different things it can mean throughout the world to different communities. Go ahead and kind of recap us and continue forth with that explanation, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much, Michael. Yeah, it's interesting. I had a dinner with influential women at our house a few months ago, and we talked about the metaphor around the stiletto, because there's some, I would call it misogyny within the gay males community around any kind of ideas of that are non-conforming to masculinity, which is true of the general bigger population. And then there's some other perspectives on the women's side where the metaphor around the stiletto is seen like the old-fashioned corset, where social construction has forced women to use images that cause pain. And at the end of whatever debate or side you're on, it still is about a choice, right? And so that's why it's still for us a very perfect metaphor, because at the end of the day, we can choose to wear heels or choose not to wear heels, and other people in a large portion of our world actually don't have that choice. So whether you're strutting with us on June 6th, going to be walking a little bit uncomfortable, it's for a bigger cause of raising issues around LGBT refugees. The most really surprising and exciting piece to strut, and for those listening, all you have to do is go on to strutvancouver.ca. That's strutvancouver.ca. The most exciting thing for me is that the allies to our community have absolutely come forward in just incredible support, both corporate sponsorship support and personal pledge support. In fact, I'd say 50% of the teams are non-LGBT mm-hmm. and just allies walking alongside us for this important issue. So it's just actually been fairly overwhelming. The West Ender will be doing an entire feature page on, I believe it comes out on May 28th. We've got Wall Financial, we've got Van City, we've got, you know, high street accommodations that contributed to our entire public transit campaign. So really exciting on that level. And most importantly, this is about refugees. And one of the things that I'm just going to share with your readership or your listeners is that there are 50, according to the United Nations, there are over 50 million refugees worldwide. And most refugees are living in just incredibly harsh conditions. And then you add, so when a refugee comes to Canada, you have to add the layer of all this trauma and all the things around displacement that they have gone through. And then you add the other layer of LGBT refugees, where they actually come here and there's no services for them. They don't know how to access LGBT services. They have trouble finding housing, particularly if they're gender nonconforming. So for LGBT refugees who suffer the same things around trauma and relocation and all those things, health, torture. There's just so many layers. The LGBT community have more, there's additional layer of complication to their arrival to Canada. So the foundation is here as a public foundation to support nonprofit charities in Canada who either provide services to LGBT refugees or who want to. So that's our main purpose. But at the end of the day, I very solidly believe as Canadians that if most Canadians understood some of the hardships with LGBT refugees as our sponsors have, they are absolutely coming forth in great numbers, because it is just incredible that somebody would ever get off a plane or a train and just absolutely not even know where to go, particularly then having to navigate where their next step is safe or not. So that's what Strut is about.
Wow. That's some amazing stuff that you guys are doing, and want to continue doing, because it is important. It's like we've had a couple conversations just between the two of us, and we agree on one thing, that equality is like the number one thing, and making sure that we're all free to express ourselves the way we want, right?
Yes, and remember, Michael, imagine as a senior, there's a lot of discussions right now around our LGBT seniors that are having to go back into a closet when they go into a residential facility. It's a similar thing in that LGBT refugees are already coming here wounded, and they're not to be pitied, but they're just, they're coming here and they're needing supports and services, and they're having to navigate where their housing is safe, or or having to come out in a housing situation. So we're our foundation is here to spearhead people's ideas and, from a fluid perspective, create opportunities for them so that our nonprofit charities can actually create services specifically for this population. So mm-hmm. That's our vision. And it's one of the things that the listeners can do is, first of all, get familiar with our organization, which is easy, foundationofhope.net. And really, we've got volunteers coming forward. We're going to need participation. And, of course, participate in Strut, which is really a grassroots community event, and it's going to have a lot of representation. One of the questions that was asked to me of one of my friends, Morgane, who is with the Trans Alliance, was that there was a bit of an overrepresentation of the M to F trans identity in just what they've seen. And the reason is because one of the many multi-layered reasons is because many female to male trans people in the world can't actually, female to male trans people actually can't get out of their countries in the first place, because they require males to sign permissions and sign their legal documentation. So you can see there's so many different layers of the refugee and newcomer issues, and it's fairly complicated. But our focus is on those who are actually needing to be taken out of dangerous situations, like, for example, Rainbow Railroad in Toronto will be one of the recipients of our grants, right? They will be a qualified donee that we can give money to, right? And they provide an ambulance service to get people out of these dangerous situations. And then we have Rainbow Refugee in Vancouver that works with other, sponsorship agreement holders like the United Church, and to actually make sure that they support the settlement and the process for newcomers and people asking questions overseas. So really, really important community partners, and Strut will definitely help support those organizations financially.
Interesting.
Yeah. You think of something's right on the surface, and you just explain a whole lot of things that they go way deeper than what I know I ever thought where problems could even lie,
Yeah, and so. Women And lesbians are, and this is, this, I am not speaking as an expert, so this is just, let's again put that disclaimer out. But okay. I mean, Chris Morrissey with Rainbow Refugee has really helped me understand some of the layers and layers. And one of the layers is around lesbians have less visibility, particularly if they've been into forced marriages and have children, right? They then become refugees, and there's some cases in the UK and where they have acclaimed as lesbians to acclaimed asylum, and they've been denied based on the fact that they have children. So women that are, you know, women, lesbians, have an entire different subset of challenges, right? So you've got the transgender community that have a whole layer of challenges, depending whether you're a female to male trans person or a male to female. There's different challenges around whether you're a male who's gender nonconforming. So, I mean, you could have a fairly complicated algorithm. So our organization is saying, okay, well, our role as the Foundation of Hope isn't to be, we aren't an activist organization. We're a public foundation. And our role is to engage the community and the corporate side of Canada, raise funds, and then make sure that the nonprofit charities in Canada, or whether you're a nonprofit or working with charities, are working together to identify the gaps for this population of people and develop and create services for them.
Well, I guess the big question, especially with the lesbian situation, there's no way of helping them gain asylum for abuse or anything like that. It was like, that's,
well, there's different organizations that mm-hmm. have been working, but there's a few cases that I've personally read from the UK where you know, a woman was being deported, and because she had a child, you know, the mm-hmm. courts were saying that she couldn't possibly be a lesbian. You know, just so many pieces, even within our Canadian system, where, you know, you've got people that are making and reviewing refugee claimants, and they may have, you know, a very limited knowledge of the LGBT community, or they may be very, very knowledgeable. So it's really a crapshoot of who you get as your, right, you know, adjudicator in your file or your case. So it's, they've got definitely challenges, not just getting here, but once they're here, there's another significant layer of challenges for LGBT refugees.
Wow. Yeah. It sounds sounds like it's not just the identity, it's the it's really, really big on culture.
Absolutely. And I encourage your listeners to, if they want to just step back and get a really, at least a high level view of what's going on in Canada, there is a great show called The Last Chance. It's actually on our foundation webpage, so foundationofhope.net. The trailer's there, so they can look at where and get the information. But that's a documentary about LGBT refugees in Canada, and it really is a heart-wrenching story of different human narratives, and it really captures the complexity and the heartache that comes with, you know, not only leaving your country, but the challenges that you face when you come to Canada. So our foundation's worldview is that, you know, we have to, as Canadians, make a difference. And I just will also say, at this point, we have an all-male board, and that will definitely change in June at our AGM. We started out as a men's sponsorship group, mm-hmm. and we are actively working with our women's community and our transgender community to really build on different voices at our foundation table, so that I can make that commitment that our board following June will look very different, which is very exciting for us.
That sounds awesome. Well, I guess one last question. I don't know if you have the answer to this or know anything more about it. What, since we are talking, this is a cultural problem. What about the families that are left at home?
Well, that's a whole other issue, right? Because some families have, LGBT refugees have escaped with their, unbeknownst to their family, of what their reasons were for escaping. Other families that I've read, so we get emails from the foundation page. We had this human from Jordan, they were an F to M trans young 22-year-old who was hiding from their family, right? So, and then you have your ones that are supported from their families of origin and supported to come to Canada, but it's, you know, you're going to be likely and definitely separated from your family, because as a gay person or a lesbian or a transgender person, you're not going to be very allowed back to your country. The other interesting paradox is that in order to have a successful refugee claimant, or one of the aspects is that you have to prove your visibility as a gay person. So here you are having to prove your identity as a gay person, quite often from a country where you couldn't even express your a gay, lesbian, or transgender identity. So it's a bit of a conundrum, right? And so, it's definitely challenging.
I guess on one hand they have to protect those who are just trying to escape or just trying to leave the country just because they want to leave. They're not really in danger, but it just seems to leave so many people behind at the same time, where they're just going to be left stuck.
Yeah.
In a dangerous situation.
Yeah, it's like, definitely refugees, newcomers come in generally with lots of layers of trauma. I mean, that's just, it is what it is. They do not need to be pitied. They just need to know how to navigate the system and have full access to Canadian life. So that's where our foundation is willing and wanting other charities to start developing programs and services, whether it's for language services, legal services, translation services, any one of those, sponsorship, rescue, and community development, where we actually, which is going to be one of our grants released in this fall, which will be actually encouraging other nonprofit charities to create actual programs or services for this population.
Sounds like it's a long road ahead, though.
Yes, and we are so excited, Michael, because there's been nothing but positive community feedback, some critique, on our board composition, and there's some other things, but that's new and normal. That's just normal with a new board, and I always say in my mind that people are talking about you means that there's something important happening, and we definitely are working towards diversification, more divergent points of view, and making sure that we're working with sponsors and corporate sponsors and community groups that are actually going to be the ones creating these supports and services for the LGBT refugee and newcomer populations.
Okay, well, hang on a second, and we're going to take another break. We're here talking with Carl Meadows from the Foundation of Hope, and we'll be right back.
Be sure to come check us out May 22nd for the Crimes and Treasons 12-year anniversary and CITR 101.9 FM fundraiser.
We're going to be having a live taping of Crimes and Treasons that'll be broadcasted live on 101.9 FM. We're going to have freestyles from Young Brazed, Rebel Radio 1, Dream Dior.
And also we're going to have some special DJ sets throughout the night. We have Cash of Money, we have Homeboy Jules, Relly Rels, Owa Boa, Wataru, and many more.
We'll also be doing a photography show called Shots Fired, shots of crazy scenes all around the world.
Be sure to come check us out. Tickets are only $10, and they will go to support CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Check us out at 8 p.m. at Fortune Sound Club on May 22nd.
That's 147 East Pender Street in Vancouver, B.C. Be there.
Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. We play all types of D&D or jungle for the first half of the show. On the second half of the show, it gives you that irritating noise that you just don't want to hear it. Or it could be some ambient sounds that might drift off and or fall asleep in the moment of life. Or it could be some new age that you just heard on most stations, but even better. Or it could be that this music has no beat or drums in that music. Either way, tune into the Late Night Show, now broadcasting on Saturday mornings at 12:30 a.m. right after the Medicine Show, also hosted by me, DJ Rain, and Jason Lawrence. If you happen to hear us around the world, you can always check us out at CITR.ca.
And we're back with Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks and our flagship station, the full-hour flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. And we're talking with Carl Meadows. Carl, are you there?
I sure am.
All right. So we just got about another 20 more minutes to go. So
I'll let you be, Michael, because I'm going into another commitment. But I just, first of all, want to thank you and the team mm-hmm. for raising this issue, because you approached me. You were at our strut launch, and it really takes a village to change the world. So just hats off to you and your invitation for us to be on the radio. Just thank you so, so much about that.
Well, we have a common friend because you have another friend in the show who isn't here today, in Kerry Gibson. So mm-hmm.
yes, my other philanthropist. I've got some great ones: Dean Thulner, Kerry Gibson, Christopher Hunt, which is AKA Simone. So we've got, our community is very, very rich with people that care about people. So very, very lucky to have so many great people. And mm-hmm. so I in leaving you, I would just like to thank I think it's CITR, the radio station.
Yes, that's right.
And I would really encourage people to go on to strutvancouver.ca, get involved with us, ask questions of us, and next year our foundation is thinking big, because it's a national organization, and next year I've got a vision that there'll be, if I have my way, Strut Toronto, Strut Montreal, so creating awareness across Canada. So thank you very much for having me.
And thank you for coming on.
Have a great day, everybody.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you, Carl.
So that's happening, I believe, June 6th.
Yes.
So, and if you go on their website, strutvancouver.ca, and you'll be able to find all the details.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I do have a couple other updates.
Okay.
And actually, I'm having a little trouble getting it set up on my computer here. I had a talk from Kelsey Paul and Cheryl Young from the Fibromyalgia Group in Langley, and the really big update is they have the route for their walk to Banff completely mapped out.
Okay.
Which towns are going to go, which roads they're going to walk on, and everything.
Right.
And in the talk, she was actually getting into, as we know, it takes about 8 or 9 hours to drive from Vancouver to Banff.
Yeah, it takes a long time just to get over there.
Yeah. And it took them 9 days to drive out that way because they had to
map
each and every piece of every road that they wanted to walk over.
Yeah, we were doing an interview on that.
Yeah.
Before they did their walk or something.
Yeah, the official walk hasn't come up yet, so.
No, they are planning on that.
Yeah. So that's where they are in the planning stages. And along the way, they were able to pick up like different sponsors in all the towns as they went through.
Hmm. Yes.
And the really amazing thing, it was some of the smaller towns that gave the biggest support.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So they have that all completely mapped out. And if you go to, I think it's the Fibromyalgia Wellspring group in Langley. If you Google that, you'll find find all their information. Mm-hmm. Or it's actually there's a link on our Facebook page to them.
There is.
Yeah.
For some reason, there is on Facebook. Yeah.
So yeah. So I invite everybody to check in with them and find out how you can actually maybe donate money to them. I do know that there will be a GoFundMe campaign started soon because I'm helping them actually set it up.
Okay.
Where you'll be able to also donate that way. Or if you're out listening to us via podcast or something like that in the Langley area, they are on the Fraser Highway. They have a thrift store, which is doing really well, has a lot of stuff in it, and they're using that as a really big fundraiser towards the community that they want to build for hidden disorders out in Langley. So they're doing a lot of good work out there.
All right.
Yeah. So,
I've just let listeners know that you are listening to the Community Living Show here on our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM, The Hour Show.
Yeah.
And, so do you have any other upcoming events that are coming up?
I'm trying to get a hold of the mayor of Langley.
Okay.
Apparently, I did have a brief conversation with their deputy mayor, because he showed up to the fibromyalgia gala that happened on Tuesday. He mm-hmm. was there, and part of our table discussion is like was around homelessness, and apparently Langley they have a big initiative to really help in homelessness, at least out that way towards Langley. And they said that they have, at least maybe a couple thousand homeless people out there that they're trying to find ways of getting them homes. Homes where it's, there's not so many rules that it's hard to live in,
mm-hmm.
because one of the things that was one of our friends who's on Access TV, she brought up something about one of the really big fires that happened in the lower downtown east side.
Mm-hmm.
There was a son and mother was killed in one of the fires. They were First Nations, and they had gotten housing. They were in the building that burnt, homeless. They gotten housing, approved housing, but they didn't take it because something about the living condition wasn't. It was easier to live being homeless than it was to take the housing.
Right.
So I'm still trying to figure out more about that and maybe get to the source of what was brought up on Access TV with that. But
okay.
See if we can get more information on that. But that's kind of crazy, you know. But like I said, the deputy mayor in Langley said they're trying to make it so that it's easy just to move in and live in the community rather than mm-hmm. being homeless. So, yeah.
All right. Anyways, I do have another event that is coming up next week at this time, because next week we are doing a simulcast show between noon until 6 p.m. where we do a thing called Access Day. It's a marathon. Our debuted on CITR 101.9 FM. And we'll be talking about wheelchair accessibilities to buildings, all kinds of stuff. So you don't want to miss that. Of course, I will be doing the first hour of the show from noon to one, interviewing with our original cast of Community Living Show. What's his name? Dave Sherritt and Karen Gibson. So don't want to miss those, because those two are on the wheelchair accessible people, and I don't know how we're going to fit all the wheelchairs accessibly onto this booth here on our radio here. So we'll figure it out some way or another, even though if we have to have the wheelchairs near the door or somewhere there and have accessible microphones to have it all access on it, that's fine by me. But anyways, we'll have to figure it all out next week. But yeah, they'll probably have some stories to tell. Karen Gibson will probably have her stories about dealing with wheelchair accessibilities, and so does Dave Sherritt. Dave Sherritt used to be one of our members from Community Living Show a long time ago when we used to do it on Co-op Radio.
Yeah.
So I'll be doing the interviewing for both of them, and then of course we'll have some special guests along the way as well. From noon till 6 again, Access Day here on CITR 101.9 FM next Thursday, next week. So a lot of shows will probably be preempted because of the show, the marathon. So it's our marathon special. So don't miss it. We're hoping to do a PSA sometime this week or so. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
So, and of course, our Community Living Show every Thursdays from 9 to 10 to give you the extra edition of Access Day as well. And anything on your Access Day next week on the show?
No. So is Karen or Carrie?
Carrie Gibson.
Carrie Gibson, yes.
Yes, yeah, so she's going to be... Yeah, so she's going to be here. We're going to be talking about some wheelchair accessibilities.
Yeah.
And hopefully Dave Sherritt will be there as well. I'm going to remind him as well when I go off the air. So there you go. So
yeah, we'll have to give him a shout and, you know,
to give them, you know, to get a chance to be on the air and how their lives are with wheelchair accessibility. So that's the first hour of the show, and then we've got some other people. I know Debbie's one of our access people is going to be there. I know Jules Andre Brown is going to be there, homeboy Jules from Crimes and Treasons. He's going to be here. So everybody else is going to be here talking about everything that is dealing with Access Day.
Yeah.
That's the marathon next week from noon to 6 p.m.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's our events, coming up events. So we're going to leave you with a jingle from Jim Labbapp in the top 13 Irish pop songs medley of St. Patrick's Day. So that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you very much to our guest, Carl Meadows.
Yes, Carl Meadows, and thank you for tuning in and listening.
Yes, thank you, and we'll see you all again next week.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Some legends are told and turned to dust or to gold, but you will remember me. Remember me for centuries, and just one mistake is all it will take. We'll go down in history. Remember me for centuries. Remember me for centuries. Worship like a dog at the shrine of your lands. I'll tell you my sins, and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death. Good God, let me give you my life. I know you lie, cause your lips are moving. Tell me, do you think I'm dumb? I might be young, but I ain't stupid. Talking round in circles with your tongue. I gave you bass, you gave me sweet tongue. Saying how I'm your number one, but I know you lie, cause your lips are moving. Baby, don't you know I don't know. Cause we're young and we're reckless, we'll take this way too far.
all right, you may. I knew my rent was gonna be late about a week ago. I worked my arse off, but I still can't pay it though. But I just got enough to get up in this pub. Have me a good time before my time is up. Hey, let's get it now.
Just watch.
Come on.
Don't believe me, just watch. 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 Hey, 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 hey. Uptown Billionaire. Uptown Billionaire. Uptown Billionaire. Uptown Billionaire. Uptown Billionaire. Uptown Billionaire.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra Siyam, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Anthaskakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.
This is Scruffmouth the Scribe, plugged in on number 3, all the way live and direct on CITR 101.9. UBC represents.